It's episode 115 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm Chris Doug.
And I'm Dirty A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about a hodgepodge topic from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we'll be discussing the films Infiltrator. And then our friend Matt King will join us to discuss the new Ghostbusters. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast@gmail.com or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com. Or look us up on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe. Or head on over to Facebook, search for the Hodgepodge Podcast, and like our page. So we've been off for a couple weeks, I guess. Last episode we did was about that gem of a movie that was Independence Day. And
I'm sorry, I missed that. Oh, wait, was I not supposed to show up until Ghostbusters? I'll just go back to my room location.
Put you back in your gimp box.
I just rappelled down from my helicopter.
So we're back to discuss Infiltrator with Bryan Cranston. That'll be a short discussion. And then Ghostbusters, which will sadly probably be a long discussion. The big news this weekend, as we're recording this, Star Wars Celebration just finished up in London. The people that were there got to see the new trailer for Rogue One, but everyone else in the world did not. They released they did kind of what they did with The Force Awakens. They did a behind the scenes featurette thing with some new footage in it.
That's pretty cool. I like it.
Oh yeah, it looks cool. It looks great. I can't wait for that movie. I watched Mark Hamill. He did his panel, which was funny. He talked for like an hour, basically just taking questions from the audience, stuff like that. They announced officially that Alden Ehrenreich is going to be young Han Solo. So that's not official.
Yeah, I mean, we already knew that.
Yeah, but yeah. Yeah, Lord and Miller joke. They said it's the best kept secret in Hollywood. It actually looked like he's growing his hair out a little bit too, so they can style it into that great 70s coif that Harrison Ford had. What else happened out there? They did announce that for real Star Wars nerds out there, they announced that they're bringing back one of the old expanded universe villains in Grand Admiral Thrawn,
right,
and he's going to be in he's going to be in Rebels,
right?
Season 3 of Rebels.
The blue
alien who was the Grand Admiral.
He's from Avatar.
Not really.
He's from Pandora.
No, he's 10 times cooler than any of those aliens. So it's showing that even though Disney wiped away the old expanded universe, you might still get some pieces of it, which I'm sure fans are now hoping that Mara Jade might find her way into the new canon. And maybe she's Rey's daughter. Rey's mother. Or Rey's daughter, whatever.
Whatever you want with her now.
It's a weird, family. Some kid almost got Mark Hamill. Because he was calling her Daisy, because Daisy Ridley. And so then he's like, Daisy's character, what's her name? And then they go, Ray. He goes, yeah, Ray, that's her name. And then and then this kid goes, what's her last name? And Mark Hamill goes, nice try. He goes, I don't know. He's like, I don't know. He's like, nice try. So that was that. Suicide Squad, they're ramping up their marketing.
Yeah, the TV spots have begun, so I heard. I refuse to watch any of them. I'm ready. I'm ready for that movie to come out. It seems like it's been done for years.
Yeah. Well, it's because of what we were talking about before we started recording, that the Comic-Con thing leaked. And so then they kind of had to launch it early, earlier than they probably wanted to.
So this time last year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So people have been talking about it for a year. It was still over a year away. David Ayer, Entertainment Weekly did a whole cover story on it recently. And David Ayer said that they're having this Batman be from the point of view of the villains, so that this Batman will be scary, actually, which is pretty cool, if they do it right. David Ayer is a great filmmaker, so I have faith that it will be good. But I was watching, Collider Movie Talk, and one of the guys said, he had a Joker t-shirt on, he said, it all hinges on the Joker. He goes, if the Joker's good, he goes, then I'm in all the way. He goes, if it's the Joker sucks, the movie's going to fucking suck.
That's true.
And it is true. That is true.
You can have the whole movie be great. The Joker crashes and burns. That's what people will remember.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So the box office this weekend, the movie we're going to talk about later, Ghostbusters, cracked number two.
Yeah, still beat by Secret Life of Pets.
Stayed
I mean, it's real close.
Secret Life of Pets made a crap ton of money last week.
Yeah.
And you saw it. I didn't see
it.
Yeah,
it's fine. It's kind of what we thought, right? Like, if the overall arcing story didn't really hold my attention, if they had kept it just in line of what are these pets doing while we're away, while the humans are away, mm-hmm. that would have been a more intriguing story.
But they kind of turn it into, like, Toy Story or something, right? Or Toy Story 2.
They turn it into, like a rescue mission.
Yeah, that's like Toy Story 2.
So, it was fine.
Right.
Nothing special.
Oh, so I can't believe Ghostbusters didn't get number one.
I'm not surprised. Well, first of all, you have to remember that Secret Life of Pets, how much money they made last week. I mean, it made like, what was it, $150 million? Or, I mean, even more than that, maybe.
I think it was somewhere around there.
It was really, really high.
It was high.
And so, that's a family movie. People, that they always do really well for the most part. Except if you're BFG. And he's tanking. And
Spielberg.
Yeah, I know, man. And it's just, and surprisingly doing well is Tarzan. Tarzan surprisingly doing well. Worldwide, it's made $190 million. Hmm. Over $190 million. That's already met its budget, basically. So I guess Tarzan had the last laugh on you, Matt.
Well, no, because aren't you supposed to make like three times your budget?
That's to make money.
To make money.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it's still got decent legs, I would say. Now, I mean, I'm sure it'll drop out of, the top tier.
Of course, it's Tarzan.
Yeah, well,
beefy
yeah.
legs. Those are very muscular. Arms as well. Whole thing.
You've got Star Trek's coming out. Star Trek Beyond's coming out this week. The reviews are actually pretty positive on that. But the reviews are pretty positive for Into Darkness as well.
Well.
And
pretty much every review that comes out this early is all.
Well, no. I'm talking about like these are actual like professional reviews. It's not just people going, "Ooh, I just saw a free screening of Star Trek." These are actual professional.
Well,
reviews.
No, I know, but most times with big movies like this, the ones that see it, and at this point, it's not overly early, no. But the first ones to see it are always the ones that, let's face it, have probably been paid to say it's a fucking good movie. It's like you can go see this movie as long as you give it a positive review. I mean,
yeah,
it's no secret that that's a thing.
And then the week after that, Jason Bourne comes out. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that's basically all that's going on in movie news. Comic-Con's next week, so I'm sure there'll be a ton of superhero type stuff coming out. I think Guardians will be there.
Yeah, they're going to
show Doctor Strange will be there.
Yep.
They're going to show Killing Joke there, which I'm guessing we're going to see it on the 25th.
Yeah.
I'm going to see it. So there'll be a lot of Comic-Con news next week.
They did show the concept art from Guardians, which is the first
That's
look
right.
at Mantis.
I did see that, yeah.
Came out this week.
Yeah, Mantis looks good. She's a strange character to get right, because she's got those weird sort of antenna
mm-hmm.
things.
I don't know who she is.
So. Exactly. I don't know any better.
Just her look. I don't know much about her actual character. I just know what she looks like.
Gotcha.
And so she's always, they were always trying to mess with her antenna because, they put them in different spots depending on who's drawing her.
Mm-hmm.
And this time it looks like they're coming out of her forehead. But she looked, costume looked good. She looks like she has black eyes, which is kind of weird. But, and Baby Groot is on the concept art.
Yeah.
Also, it's still Baby Groot.
Yes. It will be Baby Groot.
Yeah, he's got legs, so he's gotten out of the pot.
Gotcha.
But, it will be Baby Groot.
Gotcha.
He's like riding on Drax's shoulder.
And then we've seen some stuff from Doctor Strange. They finally got a really good look at Mads Mikkelsen's character.
Yeah, which is, they named him too.
Oh, I can't remember what they
named. Yeah, I don't know the character, so. But it's some named character from the comics. And, but it's not one of the big ones.
Right.
Doctor Strange side.
It's like, it's not like Dormammu.
Dormammu.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not him. It starts with an L, I'm going to say. One of those.
Loser. That's what it
is. That's what it is.
Yeah. Lance Loser.
It's Mads.
Yeah.
They just went with Mads.
And then Entertainment Weekly had some, I guess it was in their Comic-Con preview issue, they had some new shots from Wonder Woman.
Yep.
Cindy looks at Wonder Woman. And hey, her costume actually is red, white, and gold. So yeah. how about that, everybody? So,
We'll talk about it, or at least I am, whenever we get to the Ghostbusters thing. But yeah. I don't know that movie, and they announced who's writing it. A bunch of dudes.
Oh yeah.
It was, I thought, females. Like, I thought there was a female writer. And then they announced the writers for the movie, and it's like Geoff Johns, some other dude, and Zack Snyder.
I don't know how much he'll have involvement in it, though.
If it's anything besides 0%,
that's for the
detriment of the movie.
We'll see. So, yeah, let's get started with go in your closet.
Oh, yeah, I'm out.
Let's talk about the Infiltrator real quick before we get into Ghostbusters. Infiltrator is from Brad Furman, not Mark Furman, no. not Mark no. Furman, Brad Furman, no. the director. And
unrepentant racist.
He did Lincoln Lawyer, Brad Furman. He directed Lincoln Lawyer with Matthew McConaughey. And it's based on the real life story of Bob Mazur, who was a U.S. Customs agent who went undercover into Pablo Escobar's cartel as a money launderer and tried to bring them down. Bryan Cranston is Bob Mazur. John Leguizamo plays his partner, Abreu, and Diane Kruger plays his undercover fiance. Not his, but he also has a real wife, and Benjamin Bratt is in this too.
The real wife wasn't anyone famous.
Right. You know who she looks like? She looks like Michelle Forbes a little bit, but it wasn't her.
Okay.
I think her name was Juliet Aubrey, because I just didn't know that's how the names. But she kind of looked like Michelle Forbes, but it wasn't her.
And Amy Ryan
plays his boss. Customs. And it's a good movie. It was really solid. It was really tension filled because there's a lot of close calls for him almost getting discovered by these guys, by the cartel guys. And it also shows how it kind of blurs the line. You know, it's like a typical undercover cop movie where like it blurs the lines between, you know, his real life and his fake life and how he becomes friends with these guys who he's going to have to basically betray if he makes the case.
For my money, they didn't quite show enough of him getting emotionally connected with these guys to the point where at the end when they said, like, the whole I know they were your friends kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, were they really? Because I didn't fully
They
get
showed that,
that
more thing. Through Diane Kruger. I think Diane Kruger had more of that.
Yeah,
that
with they did, with her and...
Because she and Cranston got along, got real close with Benjamin Bratt and his wife, Gloria. The other thing is, too, is also because Cranston had his character had a very, very strong anger in his wife and kids, and then there is a very close call where his private life unintentionally intersects, and that's a great scene.
But it's a really good acting. I thought Leguizamo stole the movie.
He was really good.
I wanted Cranston more. Was really good too. Leguizamo when he was on screen, he shined.
It was almost like it was two movies. Like in the beginning, it's like Leguizamo, but then once he brings the fiance into it, then it becomes more about him.
It makes sense because it did seem like you know that they were kind of partners, but then as soon as Mazur has to become this character, of course he can't. You know, there's no real partnership to be had there. You're kind of solo regardless. But no, I thought that they did a real good job of keeping tension in the movie while telling the story of what was happening. I got a little lost at a couple parts just because with some of the characters and stuff.
There were a few editing glitches, and they don't really keep track of the time
or the location. Yeah.
Because we were confused. Are they in Florida still?
I think both of us at the same time, we found out they were in Miami and we're like, oh, well, I thought they were in Columbia.
Yeah, exactly.
This
is set in the 80s, by the way. This is 1986.
Yeah. This is like one of the first, this was the at the time at least, I think it still might be, the largest cartel sting of all time in U.S. history. And it was kind of one of the first times that someone said, hey, let's follow the money as opposed to let's follow the drugs.
Right.
And
he was basically the Lester Freeman.
Yeah.
Cousins.
But it was good. It was a really solid movie. And none of these things detracted enough away for it not to be entertaining. Maybe it ran a little long.
Oh, see, I thought it should have been longer, honestly.
Well, okay.
To let it breathe a little bit more.
So this is my paradox of the movie, is that what it gave me, I felt it ran a little long.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that if you needed, like the way you phrased it, if you needed to let the full story breathe, it actually did need to be longer.
Yeah. It probably should have been more like a miniseries.
To show you, like I was saying earlier, to show you that he was emotionally connected to these people.
Yeah.
You really needed to let that breathe a little bit before you could, before an audience member could, legitimately say, oh, yeah, no, he's kind of immersed himself into this life.
Right.
Like, you never felt like, and maybe that's because he never did, but you never felt like he was on the verge of losing it or anything.
Yeah, like Donnie Brasco.
Like Donnie Brasco, right. You always felt like he was doing, staying the course.
Right.
But I really enjoyed it. I think there are some critics we saw that were not so.
It's gotten good to mixed reviews.
Yeah.
But Ed Collider gave it a terrible review.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like a D plus? Like, it's nowhere near, not even close.
Was it Goldberg?
No, it wasn't. It was some other dude. I forget who it was.
But it was nowhere close. I mean, this is a solid. Probably B, solid B, I'd say.
Yeah, I give it a B.
Is it about Escobar?
No, it's not really about him. It's about his organization.
It's like, at a business level, it's the level below Escobar.
Yeah, he's in literally one scene.
He shows up in one scene, he like walks by.
So did you guys see Narcos?
No,
I haven't.
I think one of our friends said it may have been the same person who played Escobar in Narcos.
Oh, really?
Played it.
Oh, maybe it was.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
this from a top down view, this takes place at the business level, below Escobar.
Right.
So the guy who Cranston,
they're mainly going after the money man who's played
the
by
money.
Benjamin
the
Ratt.
Money man who Cranston is going after it reports directly to Escobar.
Yeah, that's Benjamin Bratt.
Because I mean, from what you're describing, it sounds almost exactly like Narcos. Mm.
I wanted to see that.
Undercover guy.
It's the same thing, yeah. It's good. Narcos,
is the guy's name Bob Mazur?
Narcos became out of sight, out of mind.
Bob Mazur.
Different guy.
Different guy. Good old Mob.
Yeah. They also blur his face. Yeah. He speaks in a modulator.
Yeah, he's got the voice modulator from South Park.
It was a very solid movie.
It was really good. I liked it.
I likened it the way I felt about it. We talked about this. To like Kill the Messenger, and that I was really looking forward to it, and it didn't hit my expectations,
right?
But still, a really solid movie.
It's a good adult drama to go see in the sea of kiddie fare that's out there right now for the summer.
And
movies.
All the acting's great.
Yeah,
I mean everyone does a really good job.
I was surprised that they put it out in the summer. It felt more like a September movie.
It's definitely
not
like,
good enough to be an Oscar contender, but it should definitely come
kind
out
of
the
a
fall.
Lead into that. Yeah, I agree with that. It's certainly maybe not October. A popcorn summer movie.
Yeah.
Kruger was really, really great.
I didn't even realize it was her at first.
Oh,
like,
really?
Because they did something to her face. And then as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, that is Diane Kruger.
I always like looking at her. She's gorgeous.
Yeah, she's great.
Amy Ryan was good. She played a great
boss. Ball busting balls,
kind of like the keep you in check kind of balls. Yeah. Like Mazur, his character, he really wanted to go further. He wanted to keep the sting going.
Yeah,
to get Escobar. That was his. But his boss, played by Amy Ryan, had to reel him in and say, "No, this was our goal.
Yeah,
and now it's over."
Probably because Escobar was tied in with the government.
I get the feeling that. Not as an audience member, but the way they finally portrayed it on the screen, I get the feeling that maybe the way they were going with that was he wanted to keep going because he was unsure about or feeling bad about having his quote-unquote friends fucking him over. So he was trying to keep it going as long as he could. But we never really got that full feeling from
right, yeah.
At
no,
least
yeah.
I didn't.
No, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, still check it out.
Yeah, definitely check out Infiltrator. It's good. Now, okay. let's do
is
this.
Is it time?
It's who are you going to call?
Anybody else.
So, we saw the new Ghostbusters movie, and...
With open minds, all.
Yes. Oh, yeah, of course.
None of us wanted this movie to fail.
Let's get this out of the way right now, because, of course, the big hullabaloo online and stuff like that is all these fanboy losers who, you know, are mad because it's women, and they don't want you remaking the hallowed Ghostbusters and all this kind of crap.
Childhood's being ruined.
None of that. That is not. That doesn't describe us at all. That plays nothing into our thoughts on this movie. We're basically grading it just as a movie by itself. But, it, you know, as we talk about it, there probably will be some comparisons to the Ghostbusters, because it's just like when we did, like, RoboCop. You know, it's inevitable.
You're remaking the movie.
You're basically remaking
a movie. You were directly asking for a comparison.
But, yeah. But as far as, like, you know, being against women and all that stuff, look, you're not going to meet anybody who's more excited to see Wonder Woman than this guy right here.
Yeah, all three of us want to see strong female leads. We want to see a movie succeed with
especially a genre
leads.
Movie. Especially a genre movie.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we all believe strongly that it can be done.
I mean, Matt's wearing a Captain Marvel shirt right now, you know, so he's he prays to an altar every night that he hopes it doesn't suck.
Yes. that prayer goes for Wonder Woman as well.
Which we already kind of have a glimpse of how that might go. So at least we've seen that character on screen now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, more than you know, most people, I think we want to see female characters succeed, because we don't want Hollywood to go fall back on its normal, females can't lead a summer movie.
Right.
Females
yeah.
can't, you know, lead their own tentpole.
Right.
Which is bullshit. So to have something like this come about and then ultimately fail. It's disheartening.
So the good news is that it's making money.
Yeah, it's making money, and the majority of the reviews were good.
Yeah, it's what we call it. It's not rotten, I guess, if you're looking at Rotten Tomatoes or whatever. The bad news is that, unfortunately, this will probably give Hollywood a green light to make more pieces of shit like this.
Wow. Okay, so... My thing is this, and I said this to Matt earlier today before we started recording, is that the biggest problem I'm finding with a lot of the reviews that are coming out about it, it seems like the best thing a lot of them have to say is, it's not terrible.
I mean, come on.
That's not a positive review.
Like,
it's like I was expecting this to be a piece of crap. It's like, no, I was expecting it to be good because of all the people that were involved in it.
Look, the acting talent was there and the writing talent was there.
Yeah.
There's no reason why this should have
been. And the directing, because Paul Feig.
The writing and directing. But all that stuff was there.
Yeah.
And it all fell.
For me personally.
To be fair, I can't blame the actor.
I blame Paul Feig, basically.
Yes, exactly.
I blame Paul Feig.
I can't blame the acting, because they were doing what was asked of them.
Yeah.
You can only read those lines so many ways.
Right? Yeah.
Well, and the way the characters are written.
You know, so let's dive into this line. So, the movie is more or less structured like the first two Ghostbusters movies. It opens up with a ghost appearing, and then
almost like its own little vignette.
Right, a little vignette. That's a good word. Good little vignette, and then it jumps into the and then it goes into the movie. The vignette in the beginning is very much a callback to the library from the original Ghostbusters. Yeah. There's a lot of callbacks to the original Ghostbusters.
Too many.
To the detriment of
this film. Yeah, there's no need. The amount of callbacks they do here is so unnecessary. You already have the cameos.
Yeah.
Right there, that's enough callbacks.
But you shouldn't have had those either. Because all those cameos are terrible. All of them.
Yeah.
Except for Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, okay.
Ernie Hudson.
Well, I didn't mind Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd was alright, but it did feel a little shoehorned.
Yeah, we'll get to all the rest of them. Yeah, you're right. The
cameos, Ernie Hudson's the only one that made sense.
Well, because they really went above me on once a cameo for.
Right.
At least a couple of them.
Yeah, for Bill Murray.
So many callbacks, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. The vignette in the beginning has, It's Jared. I can never remember the guy's name. Zach Woods, maybe?
Silicon Valley.
From Silicon Valley.
He's very funny.
He's Jared from Silicon Valley. He's hilarious. He was also, what was his character's name in The Office? Was he,
yeah, he was the new guy Nate? That came in, but I can't remember.
No, I can't remember his name.
If you said it, I wouldn't.
But he's Jared from Silicon Valley. He's very, very funny actor. He was great in Spy. Remember that scene?
That's right.
He was hilarious.
Yeah, that's right.
That was like one of the funniest parts of that movie. So he's great, and he's in this, and he's funny. He's very funny, and everything seems like everything's going normal. Then you get into the Ghostbusters. You bring Kristen Wiig, and she's fine. You bring in Melissa McCarthy, she's okay. And they have a conflict because they were friends, childhood friends, and they wrote this book about paranormal stuff. Kristen Wiig is trying to be a, quote, adult and get tenure at a university. And
That's funny.
Melissa McCarthy is, she's trying to continue doing paranormal work and stuff like that.
At this DeVry type institute. Yeah. I don't know.
Phoenix University.
Yeah. Melissa McCarthy's.
Chicago.
Yeah. While Kristen Wiig is basically at like Columbia Yale or something like that. You know, yeah. You know, Melissa McCarthy's at like, you know, Phoenix University.
Right.
And Higgins. Higgins is the dean there. Higgins from from the Tonight Show.
He's going to say suck it.
Yeah.
He's not going to say suck it. Suck it.
So then we meet Melissa McCarthy's partner in crime, Holtzman, played by Kate McKinnon, who is like many, many, many other characters in this movie, even the bit parts, dialed all the way to 11.
Every character.
All the way to the 11. Well, I would say Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy really aren't. I would say they're the most grounded of all of them.
Well, sure, but they're
except
still dialed up. I mean, it depends on your definition of dialed up. I mean, when I say dialed up, I mean, like, Kristen Wiig may be somewhat grounded, but then she's still, you know, like this...
She's a caricature.
Yeah. She's every character in here, by the way, one note. There's one dimension to every single character in this movie. Mm-hmm. There's not a character in this movie that has multiple dimensions. They talk about this kind of facet between Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig where, you know, how they came to be friends that could have played into a multi-dimensional character, but it does not.
No.
It does not. It boiled down to a line of dialogue and then pushed forward as it is.
Telling instead of showing.
Right. It was all exposition. Yeah. And it was, like I said, there's not a single multi-dimensional character here. And when it comes to like Kristen Wiig, she's somewhat normal, except for the fact that, I'm sorry, but anyone going for tenure at a university like Yale really doesn't have that personality that she has, that bubbly, girly personality, for lack of a better word. And what I mean by that is it's stereotypical girly.
Right.
Like, all of a sudden she sees a pretty guy, and all of a sudden she is just goo-goo gaga over this dude. And she was a walking trope at times, and it was really sad to see that they went to that level with female characters like this. It was unnecessary.
So Kate McKinnon is dialed to 11 all the time, and then they start, and she's fine. I mean, she's funny in parts.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like, for me personally, I did laugh at this movie. I mean, there were some funny bits in it. I did feel that there was a stark delineation though between the first and second half. The second half just kind of fell off a cliff, and I was just like, it wasn't that funny anymore. When they bring like Slimer into it, that's played out.
And Slimer's girlfriend,
Miss Slimer,
put a fucking wig
Miss Slimer.
On. It was just awful.
It was all played out.
And
it wasn't funny, and
I didn't sense the stark delineation that you did.
Right,
I thought it was all pretty bad. But it's hard to argue with you. At what point, what scene are you calling?
I don't know. I mean, it's
like, is it like when the ghosts come into it? When they actually become Ghostbusters?
No, because I was all right with the scene in the theater. Like I thought Leslie Jones's best scene was the one with the mannequins. I thought that was funny. I thought that was cute. And then
it's a room full of nightmares.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. That's great. I mean, like, there were some funny bits in it. But,
yeah, it's not that there weren't funny lines, but that's not going to suffice for.
Oh, no, of course not. But it, you know, it felt like, I don't know. I can't say for sure where the delineation was. It was probably after that great, the best joke in the whole movie, which I won't ruin, the best joke in the whole movie where Kristen Wiig goes to a restaurant and confronts Andy Garcia.
I feel like that's
mayor.
Almost two-thirds of the way through the movie.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not in the half. Maybe it's just the third act that just fell into the ocean.
It's all just a jumbled mess. And I believe you brought it up. I felt like this for some of the scenes, not the whole movie's whole necessarily, but you said you felt like it was even a bunch of skits just put together.
Aside from the cartoonishness that Dirty A is talking about, there doesn't really seem to be a natural narrative flow to this movie. The original Ghostbusters, aside from being funny, and like I said, the original Ghostbusters is one of the top 10 comedies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a good story. It's a good movie. And you go from point A to point B, and everything makes sense. Cool. Everything within the movie universe, everything's logical. In this movie, there were a lot of disjointed scenes, weird edits, and it just seemed like they had like two scenes back to back at their office, and that didn't. It just felt off. Everything felt off to me. And some guy on Collider responded to one of my comments that I made about it, and he was like, "Paul Feig said that the original cut was like 4 hours," and I was like, "Now that you say that, it's obvious because you can tell it's very choppy, and it doesn't. There's no real natural flow to it, like." How many scenes do they have of them testing the weapons? 3, 4?
Right.
You only need one. You need one scene. And it should have been the one where she had that fist thing and it blew up the Chinese delivery guy's bike. Because it's funny. You know, that's funny. Her wrangling with the thing. Oh, it's like a gator. That wasn't funny.
That was funny.
Like identity theme. Melissa McCarthy garbage. It's not funny. That's a storytelling problem. Yeah, that's huge. And then when you bring in the cartoonishness of everything, you already have this supernatural thing going. You don't need all the characters and everything cranked to 11 or acting like they're in a Saturday Night Live sketch. You need them to be grounded.
Well, that's the thing that the original Ghostbusters did.
Right, exactly.
Even on the original Ghostbusters, you can argue that some of the characters are just one-dimensional. That's fine. It's a fact. But they're believable characters.
Right.
You believe that these characters could exist. This personality exists in a person. That even though he's a somewhat of a scientist, he's also a kind of a slime ball
Bankman.
Yeah. You believe that that's possible, but these characters, you don't believe any of these people exist.
Right.
I mean, case in point, when you put Chris Hemsworth on the screen,
mm-hmm.
immediately when he comes on the screen, he is the ultimate cartoon.
Yeah.
Nothing about, he plays, I can't even call him dumb because there's no level of dumb that anyone who is, you know, a 30-plus-year-old age person, acts like this.
Right.
Not even someone who's mentally challenged. I mean, he's just, it's a ridiculous character.
Right.
Oh, I can't hear you, and then he closes his eyes or whatever. Just stop. Just stop.
Yeah. The biggest point of that, you know, comparing the two, is the mayor character. In the original Ghostbusters, I always forget the actor's name, but he's a that guy. You see him in all kinds of stuff, little Italian guy.
He normally plays like a mobster.
But you look at that guy and you say, I believe that guy's the mayor of New York. Andy Garcia is basically playing a character, you know, caricature, like Matt said, he's playing a caricature of the mayor who is brain damaged, I guess. I don't know. And it's like, he feels like he's playing a quote, a character.
Right.
You don't feel like he's actually the mayor. And that's where the movie, that's where the differences come.
He and Chris Hemsworth's character are essentially the same person. Bumbling idiot.
I wouldn't say he's as dumb as Chris Hemsworth.
He's pretty dumb, but he's pretty dumb. He doesn't quite go that far. Yeah. They probably just don't give him enough to do to go that far.
Yeah. You kind of have to ground it, and nothing in this movie grounds all the supernatural stuff. And so it kind of reminded me a little bit of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, what we were talking about with that. Where we're like, everything is a cartoon in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Everything. But this movie's PG-13.
Right.
If you're going to make this movie and make everything like all that cartoonish, wacky, goofy, all this stuff, make this movie PG and aim it directly at kids.
Yeah. Or fuck, make it a cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, don't try and sell it as like, ooh, this is like, you know, the new modern Ghostbusters. No, this is a cartoon for children.
Well, the other thing they did, I don't know if y'all picked up on this, but they changed the character's personality to fit a given scene. Hmm. For instance, the biggest time I noticed it was Kristen Wiig's character. I don't remember it. Okay, so again, we already know that she's up for tenure at a prestigious university. And then in that scene you're talking about with the mayor, mm-hmm. all of a sudden it shows her pushing a window as if it's a door. And then they're going, oh, look, she thinks it's a door. And she's it's like, that was fucking insanely ridiculous. And then she was falling over tables.
But that's from, I kind of let that go just a little bit just because I remember from the trailer, there was a scene that they didn't put in the movie.
I don't care.
Where she was doing the pull push thing. She's like, oh, I always do that.
What they showed me mm-hmm. on the screen was her pushing a window. Not something that looks like a
and
door.
Not just one window. She went from window to window.
Yeah, to window. Not right. Exactly right. It's
and
just like
she
this is
it's a sliding door.
This is a fucking person who not only has lived in the city for mm-hmm. God knows how long, but is I'm not saying that book smart is the same thing as being common sense smart, but that's just a different level. And so they just decided in that scene to make her an absolute idiot, like a Chris Hemsworth type of an mm-hmm. idiot. When the rest of the movie, she's trying to play it straighter. Mm-hmm. I honestly, this is one of those movies where it's hard for me to argue with anyone who says that they liked it because I cannot understand why they would like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The villain.
He's weak. Sorry,
the villain.
So weak.
I don't know. Weak terrible. Is not a word though.
Yeah. No. It's almost non-existent. Yeah.
Non-existent.
And it's just awful. And it's
like. Again,
Well, first of all, you try to make this villain, you try to make him, super smart.
Yeah. He's a mastermind villain.
He's a mastermind villain, yet he can't get out a coherent sentence, and he works as a bellboy at a hotel. What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah. It goes back to storytelling mechanics. You know, you've got, look at the original. You know, you've got Gozer is the ultimate villain, but the villain is really the building itself. Look at how many scenes you spend in that building, getting to know Dana Barrett, how the building's changing her, Lewis Tully, what's going on with him, how's the building changing him, all this stuff. So many scenes. This guy, he shows up for like 5 seconds here, there, and everywhere, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden he's like the mastermind villain. You're like, wait, what?
He was an unnecessary villain.
Right.
You know, I off the top of my head, I can write this better. Hey, a ghost escapes, and now this ghost is going to let the rest of them go. You don't need that guy to do that job.
Right.
No, a ghost, like you said, a ghost should have been the villain.
Yeah, the ghost from the beginning could have very easily been.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have been the one from the beginning.
No, because they keep that separate.
That's what they do. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, could have very well done that if you'd wanted to.
Slimer.
The problem with the main villain,
besides
all the horrible things we just said about him. Is one of my beefs with this movie is that it is too self-referential and too meta. It's widely publicized how often Paul Feig interacted with these dumbass
internet trolls.
And he did the cardinal sin of giving them a voice, basically.
Yeah. Like, well, they even mentioned the
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's the self-referential part is because He worked that into the movie.
Yeah, he went back and reshot that to get that in the movie.
Yeah, so there's a whole jokey scene about internet comments, and it just comes off flat because you know why it's in there.
Yeah.
And the Mary Sue website pointed out that the main villain is essentially an internet troll.
He is.
He's the embodiment of the misogynist internet troll.
Yeah.
He's a loser. He has no friends. He feels life has, you know, stepped all over him.
He's been unfairly treated.
And now he's going to turn into
everyone else.
And now he's going to turn into a giant ghost monster and destroy the world. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Why can he do that? I don't know. Yeah. That's not fun.
Yeah, why does he want to?
I don't know.
Yeah. Man. And not only is it self-referential, it is so slave to the original Ghostbusters. Like, it felt like it had to call back to it again and again.
Every 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes.
But yet they don't want to be compared to Ghostbusters. characters. It's like, you know, then be your own movie.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, you can't keep bringing back these gags from the original Ghostbusters and then be like, no, don't, you're trying to compare us to the
not only gags, but sometimes line-for-line dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, like the, how they got the logo.
Oh, yeah.
Worked into the movie.
That was...
I mean,
that was
cringe.
It might have been a picture of ham plus fist.
Yeah.
Because that's what that was.
It
was
unnecessary.
Ham-fisted and unnecessary. And then
it would have been better because, like, they had the joke, which I thought was funny, but it was in the international trailer from the beginning, where Chris Hemsworth is giving them his things. He has the boob ghost. And he goes, should I make the boobs bigger? You know, it would have made his character a little bit, just a tad more interesting if he had come up with the design. Said, oh, like, he shows them, like, a couple of designs that are just fucking, what are you doing? And then he goes, oh, I came up with this. He goes, oh, that's actually pretty good. You know, we'll use that.
So, I mean.
But then they take it further.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't leave it at
to me. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. At the end. Yeah. Right. Oh. At the end. I know what you're talking about. Right. Yeah. At the end. The monster at the end.
I mean, I don't know why we're pretending. You're right. It was the worst thing. The logo comes to life.
Yeah, basically.
The logo come to life is your Marshmallow Man.
Yeah.
At the Stay Puft at the end is basically the logo come to life, and it looks terrible.
But they also had the Stay Puft Marshmallow
Man. And they had him in there,
they brought him in, you know, to make his little cameo, because everybody needs one.
Because every single character got a cameo.
Every single character from the first movie has a cameo in this movie.
Except for Rick Moranis, because he's the only one who said, no thanks.
And Harold Ramis.
He has a cameo too.
Well, that's true. No, you're right.
There's a bust.
It's clearly not a full embodiment cameo, but yeah. But that's the thing.
The internet had to tell me that. I didn't realize that was him.
Oh, I didn't realize. We talked about that after we saw it.
It was his face.
Yeah. Well, no, but the whole point of a cameo is like you get one person callback. Oh!
Hey, Hammy.
You don't bring the entire cast in as a cameo. Yeah. And then talk about a shoehorned in cameo of Bill Murray.
Wow.
It was
not just one.
No.
Twice.
He's in there because it's not even a cameo. It's a character.
See, when they did that, I thought they were going to set him up as like a Walter Peck type secondary villain.
Yeah.
But this movie has a lot of, and I said this to Matt earlier, a phrase I like to think I coined. This movie has a lot of improv fail where it's clear that the actors are improvising the dialogue and it is not working.
No.
And this happens sometimes in like Will Ferrell's movies and stuff like that, where they do a lot and you can just tell nobody wrote this.
No.
And that scene with Bill Murray, when he meets them, is 100% improvised.
Oh,
It falls hard on its face.
Just look at his character. Okay. First of all, he's got this pimp outfit,
right?
This weird pimp outfit.
He's Morgan Freeman from Now You See Me.
He's not going to be the credible one that people believe.
Yeah.
But yet that's the character that they,
yeah,
they made him be the quote unquote debunker character you believe, well, you're supposed to believe, but no one's going to believe that character. He is the one who believes in ghosts.
He's yet another caricature. But they were set, it was the weirdest thing. They were setting him up to be the villain. Or at least the secondary villain.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
Just like,
because he's a ghost debunker. It's like, that's a perfect foil for the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Have him going around. Yeah. At their site, debunking it instead of literally one scene, he debunks nothing and then whatever.
Right.
But see, with Walter Peck in the original, he served a purpose to the plot.
Yeah,
he pushed that plot along. His being in that movie served a purpose.
Yeah. What a concept,
right? Bill Murray's character serves no purpose in this movie whatsoever. He doesn't.
Except to be a cameo. Same with Dan Aykroyd.
And you almost feel like, and maybe this wasn't, because I don't know, because I know he was the holdout originally, right? You almost feel like the movie was done, and then he said, I'll do it, and then they wrote him back in.
No. I don't think he was the holdout to be,
a cameo.
He was even for a cameo.
He was not going to be in the movie at all.
Really?
Yeah.
I think they did it. I mean, it's like I said, we're not.
I don't actually think that happened. I said that's the way it feels.
Oh no, the way it felt to me was that it was a Harrison Ford Star Wars Episode 7 thing, where he said, "Yeah, I'll be in this movie, but you gotta do me in,
right?
You know." And then they said, "Okay, fine." And then that's what they did.
Could have been done any. He could have been. You know what would have made more sense? Well, I guess he kind of was, but he's killed by a ghost on the scene while they're doing their thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Makes more sense.
That would have worked.
Makes more sense.
Instead of looking like they pushed him out a window and murdered him, and then nobody
and
says
then
anything
no
about
says
it.
And then no one says anything about it. Right. Well, what the hell? Why are they not in jail now?
I just saw Bourne Identity again last night, and they're like, you know, the number one thing that Julia Stiles says is that she can't clean up the situation. There's a body in the streets. You know, it's like, you know.
You can't do anything about that. And that was 2002. Right. So, you know what the worst part about this movie is that they take these female leads and they whittle them down to stereotypes of female characters.
Yeah.
And then, so why would any, I hate to use this word because, why would any feminist type of person out there see this movie and then be like, it was great because of their female character leads. But no, did you see what they were doing on the screen? I mean, they were just bumbling around.
You'd be better championing episode 7.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Exactly. Ray is a strong female lead.
And she's an actual character.
Right.
With, yeah.
You know, it's not.
What a concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a cartoon version of a scientist or a cartoon version of an absent-minded professor-ish almost. You know, it's, every character in this movie, is, like you said, is completely one-dimensional, completely cartoonish, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
But you believe Egon, you believe that he could build those things because he's a grounded character who thinks like a scientist.
Right.
And then you get Holtzman in there who's basically like this rock star who happens to be able to build shit.
I was watching Red Letter Media. They did a review of the original Ghostbusters. They hadn't seen this yet. Okay. And I agree with Mike because he was like, look, if they were going to redo this, he goes, I'm actually glad that they used women because do you really want to go see Ghostbusters the reboot with like Seth Rogen and they try and put Jonah Hill in there and stuff like that. And then they try and act like, you know, the original Ghostbusters. No, it's better to kind of differentiate it and make it, you know, these women. Mm-hmm. And it's so disappointing. It was so disappointing to me. It just, on every level, it just didn't work.
And again, we're sitting here comparing it to the original. I'm stating, I know we're all stating, as a standalone movie, whether it was Ghostbusters or not, this movie is not good.
Yeah, these are the same complaints that if you listen to the podcast or read any of my reviews, these are the same complaints I have for a ton of other movies that we've seen.
Right.
It's not just
this isn't this because movie. It didn't meet our expectations for a Ghostbusters movie.
Right. Yeah. I didn't really have any expectations for it to be a Ghostbusters.
Right. No, movie. I left my expectations at the door and was hoping to see an enjoyable movie.
I was more disappointed because I loved The Heat so much. And this is the same creative team behind The Heat.
Right.
And that's why I love that movie. And I'm wondering if maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe they can't do PG-13 or PG. Maybe they just need to stick to R-rated stuff. And
it's like the, that's where a lot of the comedy thought the humor needed to be more lowbrow, basically. It's,
yeah. That's what Mike from...
100% lowbrow.
That's what Mike from Red Letter Media called it. He said just from the trailers, he goes, it looks like it's just this lowbrow humor.
It is.
Whereas Ghostbusters,
that
the original
was smart
very
comedy.
Smart. They were very dry, very sarcastic, you know, and it was intelligent comedy.
I'll say one good thing about this movie is that it makes me want to see... This was my first Melissa McCarthy movie.
Really?
I've not seen any.
Oh, yeah. You definitely need to see...
So it makes me want to see something
Spy.
That she's...
Spy. The Heat. The Heat was really funny. She's a supporting character in Bridesmaids, but she's funny in Bridesmaids. Bridesmaids is kind of long for me, though. Judd Apatow didn't direct it. He produced it, but it's a typical Judd
it
Apatow.
It lost a lot of steam, and I wasn't as impressed with Bridesmaids as most people were.
I liked it. I just felt a little long.
She's good. Again, these actors are good.
Yeah.
All of them. But the material they are given to work with is complete shit.
A movie that she's really good in where she's not the lead is St. Vincent.
Oh,
with Bill Murray.
She actually plays a toned-down character. St. Vincent is great. Yeah.
No, but I thought, you know, I mean, you liked it a little bit more than I did. I laughed only a couple times during this movie.
Yeah,
exactly.
I laughed and chuckled throughout the first half to two-thirds. And then the third act just kind of
But the whole time I was like, I can see her being funny.
Right.
She's just not funny in this movie.
Yeah.
Right.
I know Kristen Wiig is funny. She was not funny in this movie. Same with Kate McKinnon. I've seen her be funny.
If you want to see Kate McKinnon be funny, it's not even Saturday Night Live. You gotta look up the Spirit Awards Carol parody. Oh my god, that's so funny. It. Did you ever see that? Yeah. Oh my god.
It was funny.
She plays a scene from Carol where she meets, and they juxtapose it with the actual film. Where she meets.
Oh no, I did see that. Where she's talking about being gay.
Yeah, she's like, get out of here, Kumail. I'm trying to land this plane, Carol. Land it.
Right. Yeah.
It's my clandestine love McGlove lunch.
Yeah. So I wanted it to be so much better. And it might, like, from the beginning, when I first saw the initial trailer, it wasn't clear whether they were doing reboot,
remake.
Sequel, what? Because it is like 30 years have passed.
That's right. That even in the trailer, they confuse you with that 30 years have passed. Yeah. Like, well, does that mean that it lives in a universe where that happened?
Yeah, or are you just redoing it and you're just telling us it's been 30 years since we saw that movie?
Right.
So we're redoing it now. So it was muddied from the beginning. Like, we don't know what this movie is. And then more trailers came out and it's like, okay, it looks like they're doing their own thing, but not real sure. So I was not looking forward to the movie. I wanted it to be good more than I thought it was going to be good.
That's fair. Because even from the first trailer, I think we all agreed.
I didn't laugh at any of the trailers.
But the thing for me is, the thing that only gave me hope for that is that The Heat had terrible trailers as well.
But yeah, you told me that, but that was an R-rated movie.
Exactly. That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, it's hard to cut sometimes. It's hard to edit.
I know. Especially with Melissa McCarthy in that movie, because she is foul-mouthed in that movie.
Yeah, I could see her being very funny in that role. But it's, you know, so I didn't laugh at any of the trailers. And then going in, you know, a couple of days before, I was just like, I'm going to go see it. I want it to be good. I just don't think it's going to be. But then one of my complaints was, I didn't want them to be redoing Ghostbusters because it needed to be its own thing.
Right.
But then I saw an interview with Melissa McCarthy. I believe it was Frosty at Collider.
Probably.
And he brought that point up. He was like, why do this? Why not do your own, like, separate story.
Whatever genre movie, whatever it is.
In the Ghostbusters, like, you're playing a Ghostbusters.
Oh, I see.
Why do it this way? Why not do something else, like a sequel? You know, gotcha. 30 years down the road, now we have new Ghostbusters. And she had a great answer. And she said that they talked about doing that, but that Paul Feig was like, if you make it a sequel, everything is already laid out for you. There's no struggle for you to become the Ghostbusters. There's no struggle for you to learn how to create these weapons. And I was like, okay, that's a really good answer. I'm going to give it, you know, I now have a slightly more confidence in this movie's going to be good. But then I watched the movie and there's no struggle.
No.
There's no struggle for any of them.
No.
It's just gag after gag after gag. And they tell you all these things. They don't show any of it.
They're never even put in real peril.
No.
Whether it be by a ghost. Well, technically the end battle, you could say, but whether it be by a ghost or by, but you don't feel that way. Or by like the mayor, who at least in the original locks the Ghostbusters. Yeah. They're actually put in jail for a reason. Yeah.
There's no black moment, which what Doug and I know from writing. There is no black moment in this movie where you think that they can't possibly.
That's right.
Survive,
this is
whatever.
Perilous. Yeah. Right.
There's nothing like that in this movie. And even when, you know, we have that scene at the very end, where they're supposed to, you know, show that they're such good friends, you know, they would do this sacrifice. It just falls flat. I didn't believe for a second that either one of them would.
Stupid.
In
yeah.
It's like I told. Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't even. Even in that world, what happened didn't seem believable. The world they set up for you, but you look at just the whole plot of the movie, like the part when it comes down to the ghost finally entering the world, right? And then you realize that they can possess people.
Well, his ghost was the only one that could possess people.
Right, but why?
I don't know.
That was my point.
Yeah.
Why did he need to possess people if he was strong enough as a ghost, as you see at the end? He didn't need to possess anybody. Why
maybe
was he
doing
that?
Maybe he had to be corporeal to reactivate the machine to
Who
get
knows?
Them gone.
Maybe, but we don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, we don't fucking have any idea. And if possession is possible, why aren't all the ghosts just possessing people?
I think
people
the possession
being done
was just there to justify those jokes. So,
right.
I mean, that's
exactly.
what it came off of.
Exactly.
It came off as.
There was
how you just broke Melissa Melissa McCarthy's neck, but it's okay. She's fine. She's fine.
The original had, I don't know if it was possession or not, but like they had
clearly had possession.
Dana. Well, no, but that was a little bit different than what was in this movie, because you did have the ghost go up the tailpipe of the taxi, and then all of a sudden the guy's like a zombie guy. Right. So, you know, you could argue that it was in that as well. But no, you're right. There was no real rhyme or reason to it.
And I'll say this regarding the sort of lowbrow humor, the way they defeat the monster ghost at the end couldn't be any lower on the rung of comedy. I mean, it's like, and stereotypical, like how would you expect a group of women to defeat a dude, a giant dude ghost, shoot him in the dick. And that's what they do. I mean, I just rolled my eyes as soon as they did. I was like, you could not have gotten any more stereotypical. Mm-hmm. And it's so disappointing. I mean, it's such weak
and it was interesting. It was interesting because like they never really, even though they showed them testing the weapons, they never really explained how they worked.
In the original,
the proton packs were used to ensnare the ghosts, and then they would use the trap to catch them. But in this, they were using it to kill the ghosts.
Well, it was both. Sometimes it would snare it. Sometimes it would kill it. It was just like that scene it's just like what we talked about in X-Men. With Psylocke.
Oh, right. Like, yeah, okay. Right.
It can fucking slice people in half. But no, this time it's ensnaring them.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, right.
It makes no sense the way they set it up.
Yeah.
The one callback they did not do was the crossing the streams.
Right. Yeah, they didn't do that.
They were crossing streams all over
the place. You know why? They're women.
No, that's what it was. You gotta be able to cross those X chromosomes.
And then if you stay to the very, very end of the movie, past all the credits, they have the Star Trek Into Darkness moment.
right.
Where they tease the villain of the next one, if they ever make it, Zool. And I'm just
That's
like,
so stupid. If you're going to do a next one, just keep it original.
Yeah.
Don't bring back something as like Zool that was done so perfectly the first time.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I thought what they were going to do at the end of that, they were going to repeat that joke.
I thought they were going to do the fart thing again. That would have been funnier than what they did. I thought that they were going to go joke, and then all of a sudden they went serious, and I'm like, no. But
yet another misfire.
Yeah, none of this movie worked. And again, I like to debate movies. That's why we come on the podcast and talk about them, even though a lot of times we pretty much have the same sentiment about it.
Except Thor.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
Whatever.
It was on FX last night.
No, I don't. I would never watch
Thor 1 or
Both. World.
Oh, God.
Double turn.
Wow.
Double turn.
They're dropping two deuces. but no, it's, I could not debate someone who said they liked this movie because there's no way I could get into their mind to understand what possibly they thought was funny about this.
It's the same reason why people will say to me, like, when I'll use another Melissa McCarthy movie, Identity Thief. You know, that movie was awful. It was terrible. And we had a friend who, oh, no, it was cute. I liked it. It's because some people, like, we go and we have a more discerning eye, you know, and some people just go to the movies just to, whatever, entertain me, make me laugh, and then we have a narrower, I would say, spectrum.
Right. For everything's subjective.
What's good.
But you're right. But my thing is, make me laugh. Sure, make me laugh. I wish I had laughed at this movie. I'm more along the lines of Matt. I think I chuckled, not laughed. Mm. I think I chuckled twice and maybe smiled twice.
I think the best joke in the movie is probably the, unfortunately, it came from a dude. It came from Hemsworth, which was like, when he's like, the aquarium is a submarine for fish.
Oh, it's a submarine for fish.
Because it took me a second. I was like, it's pretty funny. But that was the level of like laughter for me. Like,
good. Yeah, one. Just I was really disappointed. Really disappointed.
Yeah, it's too bad.
It is. Get ready for the sequel.
You know, maybe. It does. It came in number two. It was kind of a disappointment. I think they probably wanted number one, but
I don't think they expected to hit number one. But also nobody expected Secret Life of Pets to be as huge.
I think they expected it number one. I mean, the franchise Ghostbusters.
I would assume that they would have started with number one for the weekend.
Because you're not going against any other day.
They probably wouldn't have assumed they were opening up against Pets because Pets had already been out a week.
Right,
so
that's true.
I think they probably thought they had it locked in. I don't think it matters.
It's still making money, right. Which is good.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it does next week because China doesn't want to show it because the Chinese government doesn't like to depict spiritual stuff like that and all that kind of stuff. That's the word. And then, so if it's not going to play in China, that's going to lose a lot of money internationally. And then next week, you've got, like I said, you've got Star Trek comes out next week. That'll be big. You got Jason Bourne. And then Suicide Squad's the week after that. So it's just going to keep on facing stiffer and stiffer competition.
I don't doubt that it'll lose to Star Trek. I don't think Star Trek's going to be as big as you think. I don't know. It's in a weird place because it feels like it doesn't pay enough homage to the original series to satisfy the hardcore Star Trek fans. And it's not good enough to pull in, I think, people from other franchises. Mm-hmm.
Well, if it did, it would have done that already.
Yeah.
I mean,
this cast is, like, pretty good, but they don't...
Is good. It's the screenplays. Well, they're terrible.
For me, the cast
is... Well, but at least, Peg was predominantly the screenwriter on this one, so you could say that he loves the material enough to do it justice, and we all know he can write a funny... this isn't a comedy, but we all know he can write a solid screenplay.
Right.
I mean, look at did he help write World's End? So that was a good genre mix of action, sci-fi, and comedy. I mean, he can do the job.
Right.
So we'll have to wait and see.
That's another one though, where the trailer did nothing to excite me for this movie. The first one.
The first one was shit. Playing Sabotage.
That was a callback to the first movie.
Yeah, whether or not it was a callback, but
tonally, it was way wrong.
Well,
the second trailer was much better.
It's the ultimate problem with Star Trek at the movies, and it's like the Wrath of Khan did so well for them in 1982, and then that's all they took away from it. Make it action all the time, and it's like that's not what Star Trek is, and that's why the Star Trek: The Next Generation movies are garbage because it's just. You've got Captain Picard, who is the cerebral captain, and then you turn into him an action hero in four movies. It makes no sense. It just doesn't jive with what they did for 7 years on TV.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're too far away from the core of what made it great,
right?
For the people that love it, right. But it doesn't go far enough towards the people that are
to make it a mess. To make it a mess.
It's okay because they're making Sulu gay.
Oh, that's true. They are.
Even George Takei was like, don't do that.
Yeah, he was like, that's unfortunate. And then I didn't read he clarified it, which as we all know is a rebuking of your previous statement, not a clarification.
Yeah.
So, he kind of backtracked on that. Yeah. But if you read, I got his take on that. Like, I understood what he was trying to say. Like, Roddenberry didn't envision this, but, Roddenberry didn't say here or there. It's not like he made reference to Sulu's character at all being either one way or the other.
I'm not as familiar with the original series to say for sure.
But if you read Simon Pegg's reason for doing it, it's a really good statement from Pegg about why they did it, not just as an homage for...
Because George Takei is gay?
It was an homage to Takei, but like... He says, the reason why he says it's not bad, he spells it out really clear, and it's a nice little article that he threw out there after Takei's comments.
It's because George Takei's gay.
not the reason he did it, but the reason why it's okay.
No, it's because George Takei's gay.
That makes it okay.
It's like The Simpsons. What caused the Civil War? Well, there were several different things that just say something. Just a slavery. Yes. A slavery it is.
Oh my.
So that'll do it for this episode of the Hodgepodge Podcast. Definitely go see Infiltrator.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, it's very solid.
Definitely go see Infiltrator.
Definitely go see it.
Ghostbusters, you can probably skip.
That's at best a C minus, but probably closer to a D plus.
I think I'm giving it a C minus. Just because there were several little jokes in it that I did like.
I mean, that's fair. That is as generous as you can be with it.
Yeah.
right.
It just didn't work. It just didn't work for me at all. And I understand some people like it, but it did not work for me.
I wouldn't say I understand it. I know that they do.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Here's the thing. I typically I'm glad that people enjoy movies that I don't get, just like I enjoy. That's great. If you can enjoy a movie, that's great. Except for this movie and movies like it, I pretty much get mad. God damn it, how is that possible? No, it makes no sense. The world up is down. Down is up. No. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
See, you misogynist sexist pig. You just keep on going back to the original.
Exactly.
I will say I did not put much of a review on any sort of social media because of that. Because I feel like there is a palpable sense of if you don't like this movie, then you are a sexist.
That's exactly right.
That's also why critics.
That's why we're saying critics. This is probably, there's probably at least a some percentage higher rather than lower swing of critics that gave this a slanted favorable view simply because of that backlash.
Yeah.
And it's too bad.
Because a good movie is a good movie and a bad movie is a bad movie.
The sword cuts both ways. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
Put your females in the movie. I want to see it. I want to see female leads in movies. But they better fucking be good movies.
Yeah. And that's the problem. Yep. They were so busy trying to make them... I think the way I put it is like they were so busy trying to get them to be the Ghostbusters that they forgot, oh, we have to tell a story too, a good story too. We forgot about that part.
They were so busy asking if they could. They forgot to ask if they should.
I will say this though, kudos to Paul Feig for not putting that awful Fall Out Boy version of the Ghostbusters theme in the movie.
I was surprised they used the original.
I knew for sure they would use the original.
I thought that would be their way of saying, hey, look, we're different.
There was another movie, and I can't remember what it is. There was another movie that had a famous theme song that they did like a reboot or something like that, or a sequel years later. And they did record a new version of the song, but they did use the original in the movie.
And I can't. I'm Ray Parker Jr.
All right, white people.
But I can't remember what movie it was. But so I wasn't surprised he used the original. They also at the end, I believe, played the Walk the Moon version, which is very much closer to the Ray Parker Jr. Huey Lewis version of the song.
Exactly right.
Is Huey Lewis making any money?
Huey Lewis got some royalties off this. I don't think Ray Parker Jr. did.
But
Ghostbusters not included.
Ghostbusters not included. Now we're going to have to do that whole sketch. Way to go. Thanks a lot. Our thanks to Matt for stopping by.
You're welcome. And oh, technically, I stopped by.
Technically, you did. You are the special guest.
Yeah.
And next episode, I'm guessing, will be...
Lights Out.
Star Trek Beyond. And then you guys can do the little review. And then I get to sit in the corner and suck my thumb.
Yeah.
So
you get to go off on the helicopter.
Yeah, I know. Sure. but I pay for the site, so
all right, so Star Trek and Lights Out.
Yeah.
And whatever.
And you guys should both watch Narcos.
I know. Sure.
Yeah, I do want to see Narcos.
Also, Stranger Things.
I want to see that.
That's what I'm watching when I get home.
Stranger Things just debuted on Netflix, and I do want to see that. I'll probably watch that this week.
But we would like to thank our audience for listening to our sexist rant.
All the dudes in our audience.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's so disheartening.
Good review, bro.
Yeah.
Good review, bro.
It was so disheartening. But anyway, we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Yeah.
If there's something strange in your neighborhood, who you gonna call?